told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She pulled my hair, put my lipstick on.
Hi, this is the Radio Hotline with Dennis Price, and this is a show from November 29th, 2013, where I'll be interviewing Sonny and his wife, Nevia Mather, about Indian weddings, which sometimes are quite amazing. It's a pre-recorded show, so no call-ins, please. And you can find out more about this at photographybydennisprice.weebly.com. That's photographybydennisprice.weebly.com. The views expressed on this program don't represent the management of this station, and for that matter, the views I express don't even represent me. All right, sit back, listen, and enjoy. That's right, don't be a drag, just be a queen. This is Dennis Price, and I was born this way. There's nothing I can do about it, but I'm happy with it pretty much. Welcome to the Radio Hotline, and thank you, Melvin James, for a great warm-up there. Hey, tonight I'm going to be interviewing Sonny, and I'm going to pronounce the last name right, I'm sure, and Nevia Mather. Did I do it okay?
Pretty close, it's Mather.
Mather, all right, let's get those mic up there. Mather. All right, I'm terrible at names. I've said this before. I was at a bar mitzvah. Was it like 3 weeks ago?
It was about 3 weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, get that mic nice and close to you. About 3 weeks ago, and oh, there were all these beautiful women coming in their saris. And I don't see a lot of saris here. And they just look really neat, and there are a lot of handsome guys there. And this was not at the bar mitzvah, needless to say. But as I was heading for the bar mitzvah, what's that place called? The
It was the Marriott Conference Center in College Park.
That's right. And there were a lot of happy guys getting their photos taken by you. And I thought, this is a slice of life I haven't seen before. And so we got in touch. And what do you know? There's not only you. There's your wife who does wedding plans. You're allowed to even speak and say
right.
hello.
Yep.
Oh, you're good on the mic. There we go. So, all right, what was one of the things you told me on the phone was how long was that wedding that you were working with there?
So that wedding was about 16 hours, and that's
you've got to be kidding.
The average Indian wedding, if it's a one-day wedding, usually lasts anywhere between 16 to 18 hours, you know, from bridal prep all the way till the end of the reception. But Indian weddings don't just stop at one
day. You're just shaking your head, Nevia.
Yeah, from, like, them starting to get ready early in the morning, getting ready takes about 3 hours to break down all the way at night. Usually starts at midnight, ends at about 1 to 2
wow.
a.m.
So how long are the actual guests there, then?
Usually the guests start coming at the broth, which is actually before the ceremony. It's basically a way to welcome in the groom and his side of the family to the wedding itself. And it simply depends on the auspicious time when those start. But usually the guests are there for about maybe 10 to 14 hours.
Wow. And is this typical? I mean, you know, it's interesting when I say India, we're talking like a subcontinent here that is probably one of the most ethnically diverse places in the world. I don't know if that's right or not, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. I feel like every wedding we do is different. They may all be Indian weddings. They may all be Hindu weddings. Mm-hmm. But each family has different cultures and traditions. So every single wedding that we've been to and that we do are different. And they're unique.
And I imagine just geographically, you could be Hindu from one place.
Absolutely.
So now, were you both born in India?
No, we were actually both born here in the U.S.
I see. Mm-hmm. Your parents, though, immigrated.
Our parents were born in India.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so, well, that means you met here in the U.S. then, too. What kind of a wedding did you guys have?
We actually had a Hindu wedding right here in Chantilly at the Westfields Marriott. So our wedding actually started at 3 p.m., which is a little different from most weddings. Our actual wedding was about 2 hours, and then we had a break, and then we had the reception. So
more traditional, I suppose. I mean, more sort of an American style.
Exactly. It's more westernized than anything else.
Did you wear costumes or?
Well, we wore Indian clothes. So I changed the day of our wedding itself. I changed twice. So I had a red lehenga on for the ceremony. And red is a very traditional color for Hindu ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And then for the reception, I wore another lehenga, just in a different color. And typically women do change twice the day of their wedding. And then men do the same. Grooms do the same. Usually you have a traditional Indian outfit on for the ceremony, and then for the reception, men typically wear tuxedos or suits, just depending on how formal they want to make the affair.
Is that true in India too? Or
It's becoming more and more so now. We recently saw pictures from one of our family friends' weddings, and they all had tuxedos on. So I feel like, yeah, definitely. I mean, things are becoming much more formal there as well.
Wow. So I'm just trying to think about this. You say some of these weddings last multiple days.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even here in America, you're saying?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel like in India, sometimes the events can last weeks, not days. Just depending.
You know, I can't see my eyes popping open on the radio, but they're popping open. I'm like, wow.
But yeah, here, I mean, usually there's about three events here, and it starts just depending on the type of wedding, again, type of South Asian wedding. But typically there's a henna ceremony where they put mainly the red dye on the bride's hands, and then all the bridesmaids, friends, family. So that's typically one event.
And how far advanced is the henna event? Is that like a week or?
It's usually on the Thursday before the wedding, because the henna itself is the
only
darkest,
about
2 to 3 days later. Oh, so they want to maximize that time in between.
Because I'm a little bit familiar with henna. I'm not a big fan of tattoos, but my daughter will go, oh, can I get a henna? You know, we're down at the at the beach or something like that. It's a big fad. I don't know if it's as good a quality of the henna as you would use at a wedding or not, but it usually lasts a while.
So. It does. It lasts for a while. It's a little bit different in terms of henna, but the great thing is, you know, there's cultural ramifications behind it, but the darker the henna, the more that the groom loves you. I mean, there's all these old wives' tales with almost everything within an Indian wedding.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So I guess as the groom, you're going to make sure that henna is really good quality dark stuff. So, all right. So then you have that on like the Thursday before, and typically it's the weekend that the actual ceremony would be going. So that's a day or two later.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say multiple day, it's not that it's like they're all at one place for 3 days. It's just they're meeting different parts of the wedding is what you're saying.
I mean, it just simply depends on the family. I mean, some people like to do, if it's a destination, it'll be in the same location. But typically the size, the number of guests that attend each event is different. So typically the henna party is a lot smaller than the ceremony and the wedding. It's usually just closer friends and family. So that event is many times done in a smaller ballroom or a restaurant or even at home, just depending.
Wow. So after the henna party, and is this typical of most weddings, or is this a Hindu or?
I feel like it's typical of most South Asian weddings.
And when you say South Asia, what?
Hindu and Muslim.
And so we're talking the main countries all around India and
India, Pakistan, Bangladesh.
But it wouldn't be, you wouldn't go, it wouldn't be so typical of Afghanistan, or is it similar there?
No, it's not usually typical for Afghanistan weddings.
Different cultural, different side of the mountains, I suppose. So, all right. So then you get together on, like, for 2 days after that, or?
Well, then the very next day, typically, let's say you do your henna or your mainly party on a Thursday, then the very next day, you would either do a Sangeet, which is a night of singing and dancing when people perform choreographed dances and get together and sing songs. And it's just a night of singing, dancing, speeches, and then lots and lots of eating. Or if you don't do a Sangeet, then there's a Garba. And a Garba is pretty much the same thing, except it's a larger choreographed dance.
Oh.
It's basically the party before the party.
Exactly.
So now you say a choreographed dance, you mean it's... What do you mean by choreographed dance?
So usually friends and family will come together and do choreographed dances for the bride and groom to show them how much they love them. In Indian culture, it's traditional for this to occur during the Sangeet and sometimes even during the reception program. So we've had choreographed dances from, you know, 4 to 6 people all the way up to 50 plus. So
what they'll do is they'll all get together before the wedding or before the Sangeet. And they'll pick a song, and then they'll practice dance moves to that song. So everyone will have dance steps memorized to perform at the event.
So it's just like, you know, when a bunch of people get to do like a Michael Jackson dance or something, they all get together and they do it, you know, as a group. It's the same idea. It's not necessarily going to be Baryshnikov out there.
Absolutely.
Right.
But there's certain forms, and they sing, and do they sometimes, you know, have like songs that relate directly to the bride and the groom?
They do. There's a lot that, you know, sing, they'll dance, they'll play instruments. It's just a great way to entertain the crowd and make sure that the bride and groom see how much they're loved.
And we have said this so many times, to make sure the bride and groom see how much they're loved, to make sure the henna is dark so they know how much they love. This is all about love. Do people have prearranged marriages and do this? Or is this typically, I mean, because, you know, we think of India and you think, I have a friend, my daughter has a friend, and her mom said, well, I have a prearranged marriage, and my daughter, well, I mean, I guess it varies from place to place, but.
I mean, go ahead.
Go on.
Arranged marriages are still very popular in India. It's less and less so here, mm-hmm. but we do have friends who've had arranged marriages here, and I mean, they've been extremely
yours
happy.
Was?
No, ours was not arranged.
I suspected. But you never know. I mean, you guys could just be getting along well. It looks like you're a team. I mean, so, but do people have large weddings for arranged marriages?
Absolutely. I mean, the wedding itself is the joining of two families. So they'll bring people from both sides, and it's usually very large. I mean, the typical Indian wedding in the U.S. around the Washington, D.C. area is anywhere between 300 people to upwards of 400 to 500.
That's a lot of
That's
people.
Average, though.
That's average. We've had weddings for 1,000 people in the past. We've had one as small as 21 people in the past, so... Mm-hmm.
Wow. And are they bigger in India?
They are, actually. it's basically two villages coming together, you know, the bride's side and the groom's side coming together to, you know, unify the couple as well as to have a good time.
Does anybody ever elope?
you know, after 4 days of weddings, you know, the divorce rate is very low in India. And that's probably why, with thousands of guests and, you know, 4 days of festivities, it's just...
Just the planning involved.
Nobody wants to do that twice.
I guess you've got to be really committed to be doing something like that. But at the same time, well, we'll talk up a little bit about dating in a minute, I suppose. I'm just curious. Let's get to continue through the wedding. So then we have the day, we have the dancing, and and apparently, you know, there's a great reputation for, you know, you think of Bollywood and things, all these dances and things
Absolutely.
Like that. But it just sounds like a wonderful thing. We have this in our own culture. We do it in our own way. But it just sounds like people love to sing to each other.
Yeah, they do. I feel like the singing and the dancing is just such a huge part of Indian weddings.
Do you find, like, you go to an American wedding? Well, of course, it is an American wedding if it's an Indian wedding here and you're having it in America. But you go to a non-Indian American wedding, and you kind of go like, this is boring. Or do you think, well, this is a nice style? I mean, how do you feel when you go to a wedding where, you know, like the DJ is going to be the main source of music?
It's just a different atmosphere. I mean, Indian weddings, it's full of color. It's full of lively people. And it's a lot of music, a lot of dancing, a lot of fun. American weddings are a lot of fun as well, but it's a completely different
It's just
type
a
of
different
fun.
Experience.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the DJ is doing most of the actual entertaining outside of the speeches, whereas in Indian weddings, there's more dances and singing as opposed to speeches. So it's just a different atmosphere. Plus, American weddings are typically anywhere between 75 to 200 people, whereas Indian weddings start at around 300 people.
Right.
So it's different. They're both a lot of fun. They're both, you know, great time, but it's just a different atmosphere.
So I imagine that we've had 2 days. We have a third day coming up here where you actually have the joining ceremony.
Right. Mm-hmm. So and that day starts with the procession of the groom, which is called the Barat. Mm-hmm. And typically the groom will arrive on a white horse, the more and more common.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. Really. It's like the night.
Not a camel, though. Okay.
No, not a camel. But more and more now, we have grooms arriving on elephants as well, or really nice cars, exotic cars.
We're going to talk about your wedding planning, and we're going to come back to the photography, but I can see there are some definite challenges to Indian wedding planning. So you could get a white car or a white elephant or a white horse.
We've had white boats in the past and clients who've wanted helicopters, so it just spans, you know, the entire way.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Exactly.
So they come in, and what do you call the procession again?
It's a broth.
A broth?
Mm-hmm.
Just like the same word as you would have for something you would drink with soup and heat up, a broth.
Close. But yeah, so like broth. The broth is really where the DJ, they have like a DJ, a dhol player. A dhol is a drum, mm-hmm. essentially. So they'll have the drummer, a DJ, and then all the friends and family
from
the
groom
side dancing around either the horse, the elephant, or the car.
Are these just like hippy-dippy dances, or are there specific, I mean, does it look like a rock and roll dance, or is there a specific dance that people do, or?
It's essentially a hype party for the wedding itself. So, I mean, everybody's up, you know, with their hands flailing, having a great time, enjoying themselves, dancing to, you know, popular music or whatever is.
And this is young and old?
Exactly. Yep. You'll see more aunts, uncles, and grandparents getting down and having a blast more so than the younger kids.
Is there like a traditional, I mean, the reason I say, I mean, do you wave your hands around? Is there a particular traditional, I mean, I assume it's not ballroom dancing. Is there a particular kind of dance form that you do?
I mean, a lot of it's Bhangra dancing. So
what?
The dancing that's popular in the Punjabi area, the Punjab area of India. But it's really free-form dancing, that, you know, you throw your hands up in the air, you jump around, you kind of move to the beat of the music.
And it's a drum and?
And a DJ. So the DJ will play, like, high, upbeat, fun, fast Indian music, typically.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So a lot of dancing, more dancing. Apparently a place that you better have good knees. So, and this is just for the greeting for the groom. Is this at the site where the wedding is going to take place?
Right. So this usually occurs outside of the location, the venue, and the groom will usually start his broth like down the driveway or somewhere in the parking lot, and then they'll walk up to the entrance of the venue.
Now, is this typically a, you know, not too many winter weddings for Indians?
Traditionally not. There's auspicious days that people are supposed to get married on. It's dependent on the stars as well as the priest as well as the Hindu calendar. So there are certain days you're supposed to get married, other days that are inauspicious. So usually the wedding season lasts from March to November with about a 3 to 5 week break in the middle where nobody's supposed to get married.
Interesting. Give all those wedding planners a rest. Wonder who we have there. This is Dennis Price on the Radio Hotline, and I'm talking to Sunny and Nevia, who are, Sunny is the photographer, and Nevia is the wedding planner, and I think you're like both ambassadors for Indian weddings. You really have this stuff down. So, all right, so the groom comes on to the site.
Right, and then at that point, the bride's family and friends are awaiting the groom's arrival, and then they do a small little prayer and a welcoming, and then they escort them over to the ceremony location.
And the bride is there waiting or something?
No, usually the bride isn't there waiting. It depends on the family, but typically the bride isn't there waiting. And this is now when you start kind of combining a few of the American aspects. So the bride has bridesmaids, a flower girl, a ring bearer. Then they'll walk down the aisle and they'll do all of that procession as
well. So this is not typical of the way it would be in India. This is sort of how it would work here. And really what's more important, I think, is we're discussing what happens here. So, you know, I'm surprised. I didn't realize how large the Indian community was. I don't think it's so much in Arlington. It's more out in Fairfax, I suppose.
There's a lot everywhere in the Washington, D.C. metro area. There's a large population in Montgomery County. There's a large population in Fairfax County. It's spread out, but there is a good population in this area.
Wow. So, all right. So then the bride and the groom, do they have depends on their particular religion that they're going to have, but what happens next? Is there like someone who officiates? Or?
Yeah. So there is a pundit who officiates the wedding.
A pundit.
Yes, a pundit. It's basically a priest in the Hindu religion. Mm-hmm. But the first item that would happen is that the groom would enter and they would come onto the mandap. And a mandap is basically a religious area where they're getting married.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they would do a Ganesh Puja, which is basically the blessing of one of the gods that's in the Hindu religion. And then after that, the bride would come in. So traditionally what occurs is that they will put up a cloth between the bride and the groom so they don't see each other until they're both sitting on the mandap itself. So the bride will walk in with her bridal party, her bridesmaids, the flower girls, the ring bearer, and then the bride would walk in. Or she would be carried in, depending on how it works.
Like on a little seat or something?
Sort of, yes. It's a large seat, and then they have about...
I mean, they don't I'll take the arms, you take the legs?
No, but about 6 to 8 of the uncles or paternal uncles will basically escort her in or carry her in on basically a... What do they call it? Not sure what it's called.
It's called a dolly, but I'm not quite sure how to describe it.
Well, it sounds, is it like have two sticks in a chair? Or
exactly.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a little carriage without wheels.
Yeah.
Carriage with shoes. So, all right, so she's brought in, and then they after the blessing, and then I guess when they're ready to get married, the sheet or the divide comes up?
Exactly. So the cloth will come up, and then they'll see each other for the very first time. They'll exchange garlands.
For the very first time, theoretically, that day.
Exactly, right. That day.
And garlands, just like an Hawaiian lei, you know, type of a thing?
It's very similar to that. Right. Yep.
And then after what they'll do is they'll do a garland exchange. After that, they usually do three main items within a Hindu religion, wedding. One is the walk around the fire seven times, which signifies the seven vows to each other. They'll do seven steps, which is seven vows to their families. And then the last item that they'll do is the exchange of the Mangal Sutra. And what a Mangal Sutra is basically a necklace that the bride wears. Whereas in America, we have wedding rings and wedding bands. There they have Mangal Sutras, which is basically a necklace that signifies that a woman's married.
So do you see some cultural differences as far as the way the wedding is done and the role of the woman in the wedding?
The wedding is all about the woman. The guy, we joke, is an accessory to the wedding itself. So in the Hindu religion, in Indian weddings, it's all about the bride.
Interesting. So that's the same thing. Same thing here, because I mean, am I right about this? Do women have fewer rights in India than they do in America?
I don't think that's accurate
anymore. Right? You think it's changed?
No, I think that's changed. I think they've come a long way.
So, because you know, I always think of marriage ceremonies. Well,
I mean, a while ago, a long time ago in India, when there were arranged marriages, it really was more...
When it was more the rule, you're saying.
Right. It was more of like a dowry system. Mm-hmm. So it would be an arranged marriage, and the woman's family would find a groom, and they'd set up what, you know, they provide to the groom's family. So, or, you know, we'll give you X number of gold bars or X number of cows. I mean, whatever it was at that point is what they'd also provide. Mm-hmm. With the bride and paying for the marriage, in return for keeping the bride happy and well taken care of, because at that point, a very long time ago, women didn't always work, and the men provided for them. But nowadays, that's not really accurate.
The new economic world.
Exactly.
Right. So is there a dowry still involved at the weddings here?
Traditionally, no. I mean, there are a few exceptions to every rule, but 90% of weddings probably don't have any dowry whatsoever.
That's probably because they're saving it all to pay for the wedding. So, all right, so then they get married, and they go, now, this is a test, and you asked if there was anything you needed to know before you came on. What are the seven vows? Do you know them? That's a tough one, and don't feel embarrassed if you can't list them.
No, I mean, it's simply, you know, it's... I'm not entirely sure what all seven are.
But I mean, it's something like chastity, love, honor.
Exactly. Providing for one's family, providing for being loyal to your wife, making sure that she's taken care of, making sure that she's happy, things of
that
sort.
And it's a two-way street on that?
Exactly. It's a two-way street.
Two-way street. And it probably they are similar to your honoring your family and things like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You said, so it's seven walks around the fire, seven, what was it? Seven?
The seven steps.
Seven steps. And was there another seven in there?
No, and then the Mangal Sutra.
And the Mangal
which
Sutra.
Which is the necklace.
The necklace, the necklace. Mm-hmm. All right. So this has got to be the point where people start to eat after this.
Yeah, people are eating throughout the day, but this is where there's usually a break. It's either a break for lunch or it's a break directly into the cocktail hour.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, there would be plenty of food, plenty of drinks.
Hindus drink?
They do.
They do.
Okay, I just have no idea.
Yep.
So, and...
Well, it depends. I mean, some do, but some Muslim people drink as well. So,
right.
You know, just
so there are probably some Hindus who don't.
Yeah, right. There are.
And we get back to that diverse culture coming over to America
and
blend kind of a thing. And so then the party starts, and are there more speeches and dances? And
absolutely. Once the reception starts, it's basically entertaining the guests for an hour. So they'll have choreographed dances. They'll have speeches from friends and family. They'll have even friends and family who sing or they play instruments. So usually the program lasts about an hour. And then after that, it's dinner. And then after dinner, it's usually the reception, basically a DJ there or a band playing music through the rest of the night.
Traditionally, who pays for the wedding? Is it both families or is it the bride's family?
It used to be the bride's family, but more and more now.
The economic reality.
Yeah, you'll see both sides pay for the family.
Because, you know, you're saying this, and I'm thinking, gosh, I know what one day of wedding costs. And when you're doing 3 days of wedding, it starts, I mean, what do poor people do? Do they do a potluck version? Or, I mean, what if you do if you don't have enough money for this?
I mean
how much do you think it costs to do a wedding like that? Like
in the Washington, D.C. area?
Yeah.
Probably. For 300 people?
I mean, you know, that's just the multiplication on that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. I would say low ballpark, probably about 75,000, and then simply goes up from there.
Yeah, I'd say 75,000 was definitely on the low side.
I'm astounded. I mean, that's like a down payment for a house.
It is.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know weddings can run a lot, but that's like really the high end of it. And is the main big cost the food and all those people?
It's usually the venue, it's more the venue. So than anything else.
The venue?
The venue and then, you know, feeding and providing for 300 to 500 people.
I mean, because if you did it for $25 a person, you know, that right there, $25 a person, I mean, which would be amazingly cheap, but that's just one meal. It sounds like you got so many different meals.
Right, over multiple days.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you how much I paid for my wedding. It was pretty cheap, and I... We did mostly outdoors, too. And I think I remember paying $350 to rent the place that we had. It was an arboretum.
Oh, wow.
Well, that was in 19... That was in Philadelphia, which is probably cheaper than Washington. And that was in 1986. So it's been a while. So $75,000. This is not for the... do people take loans out? What do you do? I mean... Do you weddify according to your finances, or do you must? I mean, how does this fit into people's lives?
Weddings play a huge part in the Hindu culture. So lots of parents start saving, just like they save for college, they save for their daughter's wedding, or their son's wedding. So I mean, you know, people have been saving for their entire lives, knowing that their children will one day get married and that they'll need the money for that.
I mean, just going through my mind, there's a reputation of Indians being hard workers. I now know why they have to have their wedding, you know? Wow. And now Nivea, you're a wedding planner.
Right.
You do this full time?
I do this full time.
And it sounds like a full time thing. So, I mean, people come to you and say, I'm going to spend $75,000 on a wedding. I mean, or do people know what they're getting into?
Some people do. Some people have a rough idea of how much it'll cost just based on, you know, what they've heard from friends and family. But typically it starts with, okay, what time of year do you want to get married? Where do you want to get married? Is it outside, indoors? And then it's how many people. So finding a venue outdoors that accommodates 700 people.
Yeah, that's
difficult.
A tough one, yeah.
So that really dictates your budget as well.
And... Do you sit down and let's talk about, you know, I mean, people, chances are your clients are word of mouth, I imagine, a great deal.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Typical for that kind of thing, I would think. Do you, I mean, people come and, you know, you sort of, all right, this is what you're going to do. This is what it's going to cost. Do you understand where you're going with this amount of people? I mean, you virtually have to be a financial planner.
Right. So the very first thing we do is we create a spreadsheet that breaks down all of their costs. By category. So what are they going to spend on decor or their clothes or invitations, food, DJ, photography, cinematography, everything is broken out based on their overall budget. So let's say they want to spend $100,000. Then we put in all the categories that they'd want to spend money in, like decor and photography, for example.
I mean, it's like one of these things where you can literally put the little levers up and down and say, well, at this,
exactly.
You're going to need this much. You're saying you're having this. I mean, you have a program that virtually does this?
It's kind of like a program. It's something that we've developed in-house that we provide to our clients.
It's the program called Nivea Sits Down and Figures It Out.
But it's based on what's the most important to the bride and groom.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's custom.
It is custom because for some brides, you know, decor is the absolute most important thing on their wedding day. And for others, it's photography. So it really depends on what your personal preference is.
The photography is always the most important thing because the decor will wilt, but the photography is forever.
That's what we always tell our clients. We say, you know, the cake's going to be eaten, your dress is going to be put away, and your guests are going to leave. After your wedding, what do you have to remember it? Just your photography.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah. My question is, Dan's it for everybody.
Right. So the question is, okay. Well, we'll get that answer off. Your question is dancing for everybody, he's asking at the thing. Oops, sorry. Did I zip you out there? Okay.
No, not at all. Okay. Almost everybody does dance. I mean, there are some people who won't dance at weddings or, you know, during the reception or during the programs, but a good majority of the people will dance.
It sounds like you basically have to be in a wheelchair not to dance at an Indian wedding.
In terms of the choreographed dances, though, I mean, it's usually immediate family, you know, mm-hmm. very good friends. So it might be about 10 to 15% of the overall crowd. However, once the DJ starts going, I mean, almost everybody's up on the dance floor having a good time and dancing.
Wow. So, all right. So you sit down, you financially plan with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just hard for me getting my head around this when I think about our potluck meals we have every year and where we tell everybody to bring something. But this is just, you know, I've seen some big bar mitzvahs, too, and I've always wondered what they're putting out. But when you're talking, you know, $75,000 or something like that, well, let's keep going here for a second. All right, so you get a financial plan.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing? I mean, you got a date. What's the first thing you got to start planning? Do you have to, like, go find caterers, or do you start?
The first thing is the venue. So really,
got to have a place to do it.
Exactly.
Right.
Your venue helps dictate your date as well. Mm-hmm. So if the venue's not available on your ideal date or your auspicious date, then you'd have to find another one.
Right.
The major issue is that not every venue around this area can accommodate 300 to 500 people.
When you go someplace, you go, "Hi, this is Nivea, and I'm arranging an Indian wedding." Do they go, "Oh," or do they hang up? I mean, how do people react to this? I would think it'd be great business.
I think Indian weddings are so common now in this uh-huh. area that people are used to them. If they haven't done one before or been at a venue that's had an Indian wedding or hosted one or been a vendor at one, they've at least seen one.
Right.
So I think in this area, people are a lot more familiar with Indian weddings.
And venues absolutely love them. I mean, 300 to 500 guests on top
that will
of that.
Fill you up.
Rooms.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. People must travel. I mean, because these are basically family reunions, right? I mean, this is how you get everybody together.
Exactly.
Wow. So, all right. So you pick a venue.
Mm-hmm.
How big was the wedding I saw you at? I bet that was a little on the smaller side.
That was on the smaller side. I believe it was about 250 guests.
Small Indian wedding. Wow. And do they want a picture of every guest?
No, normally they don't. We have a photo booth that we normally put up. So
like a booth where you can just sit down in?
Exactly. It's a standing booth. So it's an uh-huh. open-air booth that fits up to 8 people in it. They simply press a button. There's an LCD screen that counts down from 5 to 0. At 0, the picture's taken. Wow. So we'll bring the funny hats, the funny glasses, the props, the whole 9 yards. And friends and family can just jump right in, take a picture, jump right in 15 minutes later, take another one.
So pretty much, and we'll get back to this, but pretty much it's there's an assigned group that you're going to get pictures of, and the bride might take you by the elbow and say, "Get Uncle Fred," or "This little kid needs to be photographed."
Absolutely. We'll provide about a month prior to the wedding, we'll have them come in, and then we'll basically line item out all the family photos that they want, as well as ask them to bring in pictures of the important people. We'll obviously know who the parents are, the grandparents, anybody who's of significance, but the aunt who raised them or the family friend that was like a second mother, we won't know that outside of, you know, being told that. So we'll ask them for pictures of, you know, friends and family who are important, as well as, you know, a family formal list, so we know exactly everybody who's important and make sure we get a formal picture with that.
Do they tend to have arranged tables, do they say, or do people just sort of, "Oh, you're shaking your head"?
Yeah, I feel like assigned seating is so important.
Do you feel that way?
I do, because with that number of people, when you have like 300 plus people and then they're all just looking for a table, just lots of problems come up. You know, you'll have a table, there'll only be 5 people, and then you have another table with like 12 people and people are pulling chairs. And then sometimes at the end of the night, there aren't enough tables. But there are enough tables. It's just those people don't want to sit at particular tables.
You see, now my experience at weddings is when you're under 100, you can get away with a lot of stuff. And I figure, I'm a real believer in let people figure out their own seating. There's so much food. There's so many seats. They'll all sit. But I guess when you're getting over 100 people, it starts to be a whole different thing as far as organization.
And the issue is you want people to come in as quickly as possible to start the reception. So with 300
people,
that's
a lot of people to move.
Exactly. Yeah. So if they don't know where they're going or if they're sitting down anywhere, it just delays the process.
So Nita, as a wedding planner, are you in the ring? Do you put on that tall hat and come out with a whip and make all the horses and elephants run? I mean, so it's not like you're from a distance. Like, you're going to be there the day of it and make it run.
The day of coronation is so important because you want the family at the end of the day to have fun, be stress-free, and relaxed. I mean, you put so much money into your wedding. You want to be able to enjoy it. So that's why you hire someone to be there to take care of the vendors, the guests, and then obviously the timeline.
Wow. So, all right, you got your venue. You got to do your catering thing, which I imagine is you have some that you have a few in your pocket, you know, that you can call on, and it depends on what the bride and the groom want.
Right.
Are you going to be sitting there going, all right, what are you going to wear?
I mean, it simply depends on the couple and the client.
How organized they are and what they want.
And exactly what they need help with. Right. So sometimes a lot of our couples travel back to India to get their clothes. So when they do that, I don't go with them.
$75,000 to $100,000 is just the beginning of this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is before. I mean, this is not including the trips, the travel, the preparation, the fact that the people who are coming are buying themselves fancy stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do people give gifts at Indian weddings?
I mean, they do.
They do.
Wow. And is there sort of a traditional range? I mean, are we looking at like chrome toasters, or do people give? I mean, what are the kind of things that people give at Indian? I should know this in case I ever go to one.
I mean, a lot of couples.
You got to get me on a list for one of these things, you know.
We do. A lot of couples have registries, so I mean, it's right. Just like any other wedding. You go to a registry, sign up for things, pick out things. You can pick from their registry, but also it's really popular to just give cash or check.
Well, I remember that was my wedding.
A lot of people prefer that because, I mean, your expenses are so high, it makes sense.
And it gives you something to spend on the honeymoon. Do Indians go on honeymoons?
Yep.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Is that part of the wedding, or is the dancing and singing stop at that point?
It stops at that point.
Oh, I was going to say, okay. So, all right. So, does the bride, or is it the groom who says, I want an elephant?
It's usually the groom. The groom will figure out what he wants. Does he want a horse, an elephant, a car? It just depends on their preference.
So these guys really show up riding an elephant.
Yeah.
And where do you go to get an elephant? I know where you can get a camel, but where do you go? You know, I tell you, the Seabar Ranch would really be happy that I'm talking about all this camel stuff, but apparently it's not for the Indian wedding. So where do you go to get an elephant?
There's about two or three on the East Coast, from Connecticut, New York, and one I believe in Florida or Georgia.
So I bet you they're used to coming to the Washington area.
They are. There's usually about one or two Indian weddings with an elephant in the Washington, D.C. area per year. So it's not all too common, but it does
occur. The elephant make just a cameo present? You know, does the elephant come, you drop the broom off? Is it like the limo, you know, it shows up, drops you off, picks you up?
I mean, usually most of the elephants and the horses have a 4-hour minimum.
Right.
So while you only need them for an hour for your broth, they'll stick around. So we've noticed a lot of times our clients like to do fun things with animals.
Like pony rides?
Pony rides, more along lines of pictures and stuff during cocktail hour or downtime for their guests.
Wow. So this is just what, I mean, I don't know what I'm allowed to ask and not allowed to ask on this show. I'm always asking about money, but how much, I mean, I'm probably never going to have to get an elephant in my life or anything. So for 4 hours of an elephant and a peak season time, and are there better? I mean, you know, I want your big elephant, not your little elephant. I mean,
horses start around $500, go up to about $700 for that 4-hour window. So it's nothing.
And white, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Elephants on
none of that Palomino stuff. It's got to be white.
It's got to be white.
Wow.
Yeah, and elephants range anywhere from 8 to 12,000. And the big expense for the elephants
I
is transportation.
That slap. That's my hand hitting my head. Well, particularly if they're coming out of Florida or Connecticut, you know, Bailey and Barnum is, you know, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it people who have their own private zoos typically who do things like this? Are they Indians or are they just entrepreneurs with an elephant?
They're just entrepreneurs with an elephant, or they have their own private zoos as well. There's a bunch of companies. So like Sunny was saying, there's three main companies in the area that do provide elephants for Indian weddings. And by in the area, I mean on the East Coast.
Right, in the area, right.
So, yeah, I mean, they are experienced with Indian weddings. They've done plenty of
it's
them.
It's probably a big part of the business.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And you're talking $8,000 to $12,000 for that elephant to show up.
Right.
Better do a really great job. But in a sense, there's a big symbolism, as you're saying, as to how you show up for your wedding. And I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, the whole thing is very symbolic. And this is like the main event, I imagine. You know, if you show up on a mule, it's with two tusks taped to it, it's going to not be very auspicious.
I mean, it is. I think it really depends on the couple. But a lot of our clients, I'd say, usually pick a horse or an exotic car. And if not one of those, then elephant, helicopter. We've done a few boats where they'll have a whole party on a boat. And that's kind of cool, too. So ways to make it unique.
So can I get back to this question? I mean, what do you do if you're making $25,000 to $50,000 a year and, you know, you're planning on having kids and you're, I mean, are there Indians who just basically sit down with their kids and go, we're really from New York. You're not going to have a $75,000 wedding.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it really...
You're going to go to somebody else's.
There's a lot of people who get married right at the temple itself.
I mean, you guys had a fairly simple... Sounds like you guys managed to avoid $75,000 on yours.
Not quite.
Really? You guys spent a lot on yours? How many guests again?
We had 250. Ours was small and intimate.
A relatively small and intimate, and just a one-day thing. And still, you really put the money in.
Ours wasn't one day. Ours was still 3 days. It was a few. It was actually more than 3 days long because we had a few events back in New Jersey where Sunny's from as well.
Wow.
So it was 3 days locally and then a few extra days.
Isn't that a lot of pressure on you? Don't you feel like, gosh, it's going to be like I'm a politician? Although, Sunny, you sound like you'd be just as happy with a room of 500 as you would with 20. But, I mean, isn't that a lot of pressure on you?
In terms of planning?
No, in terms of actually being there. As having, you know, one of the nice things I would imagine for someone picking you to plan, it's like, how many years have you been married now?
We've been married for 2 years.
Okay. So particularly now, and how long have you been doing the business?
The photography business?
Well, how long have you been doing the wedding planning?
2 years.
2 years. Well, what do you know? Putting your experience to practical use. So this is something brides, and you've been doing the photography, I bet you, much longer than that.
About 7 years now.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, they must like the fact that you know what they're going through.
I mean, it's a huge advantage. The fact that we were married in the Washington metro D.C. Mm-hmm. area, had an Indian wedding, and went through everything that they're experiencing and going through.
Except for maybe you're there to help them, and they didn't have you. And you didn't have you.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you definitely learn a lot as you go through the process yourself. So you learn what worked, what didn't work, and then with every wedding you do, you learn all that as well.
How many weddings do you think you do a year? Of course, having been doing it 2 years, it's kind of a hard thing to say because it could change a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It depends on what type of wedding. So if we're providing full... scale planning, then we keep that limited. But if it's just day of coordination or partial planning or month of planning, we can take on a lot more of those than we can full scale planning.
Is it like once a month or something like that in peak season or once a week? Or
It just depends on the year because with auspicious, it, you know, the Hindu calendar changes from year to year. And it's not just Hindu weddings. So we do Christian weddings, Catholic, Muslim weddings,
really?
Everything. Mm-hmm, 'cause there's... Wow.
A wedding's a wedding,
wedding
right?
A wedding, I mean, really.
So a lot.
Yes.
There are times of the year where you'd have to call you twice to get through.
Exactly. I mean, the summertime is really busy, as is October, but come November,
that
December,
foliage, right? Everybody wants that foliage, that natural backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Comes to the day of the wedding, or even before the day of the wedding, I mean, is there like a rehearsal dinner or anything like that? Do people?
That's essentially what the Sangeet is. There's no actual rehearsal, but you know, it's just a great time for friends and family to get together and have a good time.
Right. Because this really sounds, this does sound like a family blending thing. This is a deeply socially complicated thing that's going on. Do you have to tell people about etiquette? Do you have to explain to them, you know, the names of things? I mean, do you have to help them be Indian, so to speak?
A lot of the clients may not know all the items that happens. And so what Neva does is that she'll send them a PDF with, you know, all the etiquette information, all of the religious aspects of it, so that they're immersed with all the information that they need to understand exactly what's going on at their own wedding.
What do atheists do?
They don't really talk too much at the wedding.
No. I mean, we've had some non-denomination weddings where
I mean, you know, for instance, I'm a secular Jew. I don't believe in God, but I'm Jewish. It's mm-hmm. important for me for my kids to be aware of our cultural heritage, where they come from. So you can be an Indian and want to have an Indian wedding yet not necessarily be a full Hindu, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to do the ceremony. I mean, it's completely customizable. You don't have to do all those, the seven rounds on the fryer and the seven steps. You can do other things.
Oh, you could even do that anyway. But it sounds to me, you know, some of the things, the common themes you keep going on is they love each other and it's going to be your, it's going to be custom. It's mm-hmm. going to be what you want it to be.
Right.
I mean, you're going to bring this culture and everything, but you're going to set it up the way you want to set it up.
Exactly.
Wow.
I mean, it's really about two families coming together at the end of the day.
Which is really the third part of it. It is two families, two, as you said earlier, two villages coming together virtually. Because, you know, America has an odd idea of what a village is. We're sort of dispersed, but we're in villages and groups, social groups, and so it comes together very differently. Mm-hmm. So how many, I mean, we have caterer, photographer, transport, which could be either pachyderm or car, mm-hmm. transport. We got the guy who's going to officiate.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably some professional entertainment beyond the DJ.
Right, exactly. And then you've got a decorator.
Decorator.
Cake. Or cake. Are you doing like dessert trays, bands, cinematographer, photographer, lighting, sound.
So you're talking like 10, you know, 10, 12, if you're on the outside, 12 things that you have to coordinate. They all have to happen at, you know, at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of vendor coordination and then coordinating guests so the guests understand where they have to be when. And then it's a lot of coordinating of the family and ensuring that the timeline, everything runs on time and accurately, and everyone who's involved in the wedding knows where they're supposed to be when.
It's like a small production of a movie. I mean, really, I mean, it sounds like that.
It's a lot of work.
Do you have help when you do this?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We always come with a few people, just depending on the size of the wedding and the logistics of everything. And by that, I mean, if the ceremony's in one location and then the reception's in another, then there's a lot more logistics involved. Transporting people on shuttle buses, making sure all the vendors know where they're supposed
wow,
to be when.
This is just amazing. I'm mind-boggling. I hope my daughter isn't listening to this. I don't want to get any ideas. Wow.
But, I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a really wonderful thing, and in a sense, you pay a price to have this happen. You know, why wait until a funeral or something like that? You know, we haven't even gotten. You don't do funerals, too, do you?
No.
No. All right. So, wow. And now your part in this, Sonny, is you do the photography, and I suppose you hold her hand and make sure she stays sane too.
Absolutely, we do photography, cinematography,
and you're independent in the sense that you will work with her, and she will go to you for it, but it's not like they have to use you.
No, not at all.
And you do things that have nothing to do with her.
Absolutely. We have two completely independent businesses, and they work that way on purpose. You know, if we have a client that would fit perfectly with her personality, with what she can provide, with her price range, we send it over. And, you know, the same way across the board. But we give full disclosure that we are a married couple, and, you know, we also give other companies as well. So I won't just give Neva's company.
Right.
I'll give two or three others as well.
Right.
I suspect people figure out pretty quickly you're married.
Yeah,
so.
Very quickly. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't hide it, so we want full disclosure, everyone to know.
Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious, too. So where did you get your training as a photographer?
I actually don't have formal training. I was in the
Marine Corps. Oh, I'm psyched. All right. This is what I like to hear because I'm not formally trained either. You were in the Marine Corps.
I was in the Marine Corps, and I absolutely loved photography when I was in the Marine Corps. It was just very unique, very different. So slowly but surely, I became the unit photographer, photographing everything that happened at the unit itself.
You know, that's a great way to learn because you're having a fun time. You have your equipment. You get to know your camera, and you take the shots.
Exactly.
And a lot of photography is figuring out that person's personality.
Absolutely. So once I was out of the Marine Corps, I came back to the Washington, D.C. area with a camera I really couldn't afford, so I had to figure out how to pay it off. So I started second shooting all over the place.
What's second shooting?
Essentially helping a primary photographer, either working with the lighting or, you know, taking shots from different angles so that they have a full range of coverage for the event itself.
Were you learning as you went?
A little bit. I mean, there's wonderful forums out there and online communities, so I would learn quite a bit and then try to apply it at the event itself.
Did you find yourself getting equipment heavy?
Very quickly, yeah. Equipment is very expensive and it's very fun, so it doesn't go well together if you can't pay for it. So worked second shooting with a lot of the photographers in this area, doing fashion work, food photography, commercial photography, as well as weddings. And I absolutely fell in love with weddings after a while. And
it's like an apprenticeship is what you're
exactly
saying.
Right. Did that for about 4 years, and then we started our own company about 4 years ago as well.
Right. Now you have a couple guys who work with you?
Absolutely. We have a large team. So since we do photography and cinematography, we bring anywhere between 4 to 6 people to each event.
That night I saw you, it looked like there were about four or five there.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was four of us that night.
That was a small wedding. Were you doing cinematography there?
Yes, we were.
Wow, because I think, you know, people pay for this. They want to have a record of it, a movie they can look at.
Absolutely. When you're spending that type of money and it's such an important part of your life, you want to have those memories captured well.
And so, I mean, you'll virtually make the movie of you know, the wedding.
Exactly.
I mean, we're talking edited and subtitled and the whole shebang, right?
Exactly.
Wow. And available on DVD and
we provide everything these days in Blu-ray. It's just much better quality.
Wow. So, all right. I mean, 3 days of shooting. I mean, what do you do? I mean, you work out with them what they're going to want, and
yeah, about a month prior to the wedding, we'll get a good understanding of exactly what's occurring, when it's occurring, and then we'll get the room diagrams, the family formal list, and any type of information that would assist us in making our lives easier. We'd ask them for all that information, and then from there, we'd sort out where we're going to shoot what, you know, talk to the clients, make sure that we capture exactly what they're looking for and when they're looking for it, and then go from there.
Are you sometimes doing, like, a wedding every week?
Once we get into
the busy season,
from about May to almost November, we have a wedding almost every weekend.
How do you keep it straight?
All the clients are great. So, I mean, we create a personal bond with all of our clients. We do an engagement session with every one of them, so we get to know them on a personal level. And then from there, you know, it's very easy to keep track
of. And you must
have
an amazing photographic memory. I mean, I, in a sense, you have to really keep people's faces and names together.
You do, but, you know, because we've been interacting with them throughout the wedding process, you know, every month we'll send them emails about, you know, just tips and tricks on how to make the wedding that much better. And then, you know, email correspondence as well as, you know, meeting our clients in person from time to time always helps to really get to understand and know our clients.
Wow. This is pretty cool. So what do you do, just to talk about a little of the technical stuff, you use a full format camera.
Yes.
You edit the pictures and everything like that. Typically, how many pictures are you going to shoot a day at a wedding? I mean, imagine it depends what the wedding is, but...
Exactly. We shoot about 50 to 75 images per hour. If it's a 16-hour wedding, we're giving them anywhere between 900 to 1,200 images.
Wow. And do you edit them and then say, pick?
What we'll do is we'll edit all the images and then we'll provide them...
I mean, there's a culling in there, I'm
exactly
sure, right. But you edit what's good... And you let them pick, because do you find that the client, I mean, they know what they're going to like and what they're not going to like?
I think we have a good understanding of that from the engagement session, because we'll ask them at that point, you know, what are the pictures that they love? Which ones are they not 100% sure about? So we understand if they're photojournalistic, more post-portraiture, what exactly they're looking for. But what we'll do to try to make their lives easier is we'll pre-design an album for them, and then we'll provide them that. So the album will tell the story of the day from beginning to end, and so the clients can go through that and really get a good sense of everything that occurred. But we'll also provide them the high-resolution DVD with all the images that they can go through at their leisure as well.
So you're going to be doing the album for them, too.
Exactly.
Typically, that's part of the service.
Yes.
Wow. So this is an intense editing experience, then, I imagine. Do you do it all on your own software, the album putting out, or do you use one of the services out there?
We use Photoshop for all of our albums.
So you can set it up just doing it that way?
Exactly.
And people are going to get hard copy prints. It's so funny. I do a lot of photography just for industrial. I mean, I have pictures of you know, kids and dogs and my wife and family, and then there's a toilet, a broken wall, you know, and I'm always sending them. I live in the JPEG world of sending people photos over the internet, saying, "Is, you know, is this prepared the way you want? Is this the picture you want?" But pretty much, are you giving people? How do you present people with your stuff?
We'll provide them an online gallery, which they can go through to view all the images. Exactly.
Right.
And then we'll also provide them a high-resolution DVD with all the images on it.
Wow. So your guys who you work with, are these people, I mean, are these people that you just bring in according to what you need, or...
All of them have been trained through our company, so we'll provide people with a certain expertise for that day. The cinematographers we work for are all independent contractors. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic at what they do, so we
bring them in. So you don't typically necessarily have your own movie crew?
We have a crew, but it's a small crew. When we need additional people, we'll hire out.
Because, you know, that's a big... You're shaking your head, Nivea, yeah. Because this is a big thing. We're talking, you know, sound and light and cameras.
Absolutely.
You know, action. You know?
And when you have people doing it for 14 to 16 hours, there's also a level of fatigue. So we need to make sure that everybody's rested and comfortable and, you know, able to shoot. Or if they need breaks, you know, we're breaking people out when we need to. So it's a logistical nightmare just from the photo and video portion as well.
Because I'm saying, you know, you can't, it's kind of hard to do both.
Exactly. So we'll have concentrated people, one person doing audio and as well as video, one person doing just video, one person doing just photo.
Do you find yourself doing more management in this, or are you there with the camera?
When we started, it was a lot of management, but now we have a well-oiled machine, so it's fairly simple. We all have headsets as well, so if there's something in particular we need, we'll just talk over the radio.
Wow.
Yeah,
this is pretty intense stuff here, you know. This is not just showing up with a camera and shooting away.
No, not at all. I mean, it's the couple's first family heirloom, their pictures as well as their Blu-rays. So we want to make sure that they're absolutely beautiful and everything that they dreamed of and more.
And
so,
on top of this, you have the photo booth. Do you rent those out, basically?
We do, but 90% of the time we use it for our wedding, so we don't have all too much of a market to rent it out.
No, I mean, what I'm saying is do you own your photo booth?
Yeah, we own our own photo booth.
That's quite an investment, isn't it?
It is a big investment.
What do one of those things run?
They run anywhere between $7,000 to $12,000.
Well, that's not that bad. They're not as expensive as a car.
No, but on top of the photo booth itself, you need the camera, you need the lighting, you need the triggers, everything else. Mm-hmm. So that's probably another $2,000 investment.
Wow. So it just adds up after
it
a while.
Does.
About a lot of equipment. And do you... basically run it as a package then? It's not per photo? I mean, the whole...
Well, everything's customizable. So we do photo independent of video, so they can do just photo, or they can do just video, or they can just rent the photo booth. It's completely up to them.
Well, I mean, does a person come and say, look, I want this, this, and this, and you're going, how about this, this, and that? And then when you're all done, we got a package of what's needed to do, and I will figure out a price for it, and I
absolutely
give you a price. Is that basically, you know, you figure your time, your materials, what's going to be involved?
Exactly. We customize it based on the clients because a lot of the weddings that we do are 2-, 3-, 4-day weddings. So mm-hmm. it's very hard to just do an hourly rate because it gets very expensive quickly. So we'll basically package everything up based on what they're looking for and what they want and then provide a price that way.
Wow. What was your first wedding that you did?
It was actually a Christian wedding.
Simpler, right?
8 years ago. I think it was about 50 people at the wedding, so mm-hmm. it was a little different.
It was a good place to start and cut your teeth.
It was.
Was this for a friend or?
It was actually for a wedding photographer in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So did he hired you to do the whole wedding then?
He did. He actually hired me to hold his camera and hold his lights and hold all the equipment. And then after a while, I just started shooting on the side while at weddings when there wasn't much going on. Slowly but surely, I started second shooting with him once, you know, the skill level went up, and then started primary shooting for him as well.
What kind of equipment do you have? How do you store and back up? I'm getting a little technical now, but I'm curious. Hey, by the way, this is Dennis Price with 9 o'clock hour. Let me know if you guys are getting past your bedtime. This is Fairfax Public Access Radio. This is the radio hotline with Dennis Price. I'm interviewing Sonny, I'm going to get this right, Mather?
Yes.
Yes. And his wife, Nivea? Nevia?
Neva.
Okay. Yep. Does that have any meaning?
It means snowy.
Oh, I like it. And of course, Sonny means sunny. And does the last name have any meaning?
It's just a, it's a popular last name.
Kind of like Smith?
Exactly. It's photographic.com.
Photographic.com. And if they want to find you there, is that a good way to reach you, or do you have your own website?
I have my own website. My website is projectbridedc.com.
Project Bride DC. That sounds interesting. Is there more to that than meets the eye?
So we do full-scale planning, but in addition to that, we do custom branding for all of our clients. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the project bride aspect of it came from. So custom branding and design, monograms, colors, everything. So we're big believers in branding your entire wedding, starting from your save the date to your website to your invitation all the way down to your thank you cards.
Wow. Do you have like a background in marketing?
I do not. My background is actually in finance.
Well, there you go. That talks about organizing and getting your rows of numbers to go together.
Right.
But I like the sense of how you market this. This is pretty big stuff. So it's not like you just walk on and, you know, snap away at all of that. So, all right, back to the technical thing of our photography. Digital archiving. We're talking lots of hard drives?
We are. My computer itself, we have about 30 terabytes. Just a ton of backup. But what we start the backup is at the wedding itself. If I get in a car accident, I don't want to lose all the pictures.
Right.
So,
this is not a can't do it over.
Exactly. Right. So every single one of our cameras has dual slots, meaning that we
photograph. Nikons and these good cameras are good.
So
you're already starting two chips to begin with.
Exactly.
It's a lot of data.
It is. It's a ton of data, but we're automatically saving onto two cards right off the bat. Before we leave the venue, we'll back it up onto a laptop as well as back it up on a hard drive.
Right.
So
do you use the cloud at all?
We do. When we save items, once we get back to the studio itself, mm-hmm. we'll save it onto our computer. We have a server connected directly to it that backs up hourly. And then we'll do cloud storage as well. So we have two offsite storages, two onsite storages.
And did you say 30 terabytes?
Yes.
And is that just, do you have like beyond, that sounds like a tremendous amount, but that isn't as much as you'd think for the size of the data you have.
To be honest, we use about 27 terabytes to 30 terabytes every year in 1 year. So we have to clean up, call, delete anything that we're not going to use, and then archive and back up everything that, you know.
Do you have like a specific service to keep, or is just all your machine and what you're saying, the cloud?
We save everything on our machine. We have a server in the back room that we back everything up to as well. And then online storage, I think we use Backblaze and cloud storage.
Wow. So because it's just a lot of data. If you're talking 500 to, 500 pictures in a day, and, you could easily be doing, conceivably have a terabyte of data right there.
When we do photo and video, when we're doing photo and video, it's about a terabyte per wedding.
Right, but I would think just down the photo, you could easily, build it up there.
It gets very large, very quick.
Particularly with the full frame and the raw file, it adds.
Absolutely. So the raw files, we shoot with a D800, which is Nikon, mm-hmm. and they shoot about 40 gigs per picture.
Yeah, so that,
sorry, 40 megabytes per picture.
I was going to say 40 megabytes, 40 megabytes per picture, it begins to add up.
It does,
quick,
very
a
quickly.
Great deal. So, wow. Do you spend a lot of time, do you do the editing yourself? Are you editor-in-chief?
I am the editor-in-chief. We outsource a little bit of the work.
Do you have other guys?
Mm-hmm. But everything else we do in-house.
So, you're talking hours sitting behind a computer looking at pictures.
Absolutely. It gets very, we do a lot of it. We like to keep the quality up high, so we do a lot of it in-house itself.
Because the editing, theoretically you're getting most of what you want in your photo. You're getting your light setting and everything right, but, afterwards, there are a lot of things you can make up for in the editing.
Exactly. You always want to tweak it just a little bit more to make it that much more perfect.
There's no picture so perfect that you can't tweak it, right?
Exactly.
Wow. That's just amazing as far as that. So what do you think the most challenging for, this is a question to both of you, what do you think the most challenging clients or situations are that you have to face?
We don't believe that there's a challenging client. We just have to educate them. it comes down to making sure that they're happy and we understand exactly what they're looking for. There's always going to be that bridezilla, but 90%
I didn't say it. You did first.
But 90% of the time, you can, make sure that they're happy and we provide everything that they want once we educate them and talk to them
exactly.
and, get a good understanding of what they're looking for.
And they're anxious. They want to control, and they don't have a lot of control over a situation like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like Sunny said, education is the biggest thing that we've learned over the years. So ensuring that they know what they want is really what they want, and then ensuring that they have an understanding of why things are occurring. So, for example, if their family is pushing for the ceremony to be 2 hours because they have to get X number of events within that ceremony completed, it's educating them so they understand why each and every little piece of the ceremony has to take place, why the priest is insisting
now,
on things.
Now, isn't there usually a person who's paying?
There is.
Yeah. I'm saying, right, what I'm saying is, mm-hmm. So isn't there a diplomatic game here of where you just have to say, this is what your dad is doing, and or this is what your husband, or this is, I mean, isn't there a point where you have to look at, this is what the plan is. I can put a word in, but if you are unhappy with this, you need to talk to him. I mean, do you have that?
We try to do it a little bit more diplomatically and making sure everybody's on the same page. Because if the dad's unhappy but the bride's happy, it's still going to cause an issue. So we want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and everybody's happy. So, I mean, the only way we really can do that is through communication and making sure that everybody understands all points of views and makes a decision together.
We're talking a lot of meetings here.
A little bit. It gets up there.
Yeah, I mean, but thankfully in the digital age, you can do a lot of these meetings over Skype,
right.
Conference calls, and just emails. So you don't always have to meet in person, but that definitely helps.
Wow. How often do you guys go back to India?
I haven't been back in about 11 or 12 years. I've only been about 4 times.
Only 4 times. Okay. So.
Yeah, I've probably went back 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, our parents go every year. Mm-hmm. It's just not something that we do.
Well, it's expensive and it takes a lot of time.
It takes a lot of time. That's the thing. You can never just do a week-long trip. You need at least take 2 weeks. The flight itself takes forever.
Right. I don't know if I can handle that in itself. So where do you guys see your business going over the next few years? You know, I mean, you have to hit your 3-year period. He's been here for 7, as you've been saying. So where do you see, I mean, what do you like? What do you want it to look like in the future?
I mean, I think for the photography, we just want to become more honed in our craft and making sure that our clients are happy. So I think we're doing a very good job right now, but we just want to make sure that we keep happy clients and that, you know, they keep coming back for more.
Wow, because it sounds like it's so much more than just snapping that picture in this case.
Yeah, and I mean, for the planning aspect of things, it's about creating more tips and templates and ensuring that our clients are completely educated and they have an understanding of what they're getting into. So that's our biggest thing for the next few years, is just ensuring that everybody is well-educated and happy.
Wow. So do you see yourself expanding at all beyond weddings? And
so we do currently do a few additional events outside weddings. So, mm-hmm. And this is for Sunny, as his clients get married and they move on to the next stages of their lives, Sunny's doing a lot of maternity pictures.
I was just going to say,
baby
okay,
pictures.
I got the pool. It's a little hard to do with that shining off the water in the birth pool. Don't splash the camera.
But, you know, there's such a large Indian market in this area, South Asian market, that, you know, I think we can be completely happy staying within that market and expanding that much more.
Wow. Well, this has been pretty cool. All right, I'm going to give out your website. And this is Dennis Price on the Radio Hotline. And I got some stuff to give you. Right here. Heidelberg Bakery. I don't know if you've ever gotten a cake from them or not. Because they're a German bakery, so maybe they wouldn't do the Indian style cake. But you get a free loaf of bread from them.
Oh, wonderful.
And they're down. You know where that is? You ever been to Heidelberg Bakery before? You're probably not so much in Arlington. If you're out in Rockville, you were saying, right?
Yeah, we live in Rockville.
Right, so great bakery down on Lee Highway and Glebe Road. One of my underwriters. So get a loaf of bread there. I never walk in there and walk out with just a loaf of bread. So I like their corn rye. Chef and Carla are great people. But that's not all. You get to go see the Comedy Spot, their blue show. Oh, we better give you 4 tickets. That's right. That's you know, they do improv. It's at Boston Commons, if you've ever heard where that is.
Yep.
And they do lots of stuff. I'm sorry I'm not, like, giving you a Cadillac or something. You know? I always say, got to get Oprah Winfrey on the program and go, here's your Cadillac or something like that. So. Wow.
We love comedy shows. This will definitely come in handy.
Well, you give me the impression of having a good sense of humor. And doing what you're doing, I imagine you have to have a good sense of humor. So, you know what I want to ask you? because I just want to embarrass you totally. This is a Howard Stern moment, I guess. So what are you going to do if you have a kid?
We've thought of that.
I mean, other than the times your parents have said, when are we going to have a kid?
Right.
Well, we're going to make sure that he's born, you know, during...
Oh, he?
Of course, he. In January, February, during the low season. So, you know, that'll work out great.
I have heard of crazier things, but I know a lot of teachers who plan their kids for the summer. So, you know...
We'll see what happens.
Right.
We're very lucky in that we have very supportive family and friends. So whatever happens, I'm sure they'll be willing to jump in wherever we need help.
Wow.
It does Soon my father and her father will be calling in and asking these questions too.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I just think it's a really cool thing that you seem to have this business that works together. It just sounds like a lot of fun. So and it sounds like it could even be profitable if not ruining your eyesight from sitting in front of computers. All right. Well, this is Dennis Price on the Radio Hotline. Hold on, I'm going to play some music, and I have a couple of announcements. Let me quickly make my announcements here that I haven't mentioned. I want to remind people that here we are coming up on Thanksgiving, and there's a thing called the Arlington Food Assistance Center, which you can get to by just looking up the AFAC, or you can go to afac.org. That's a great place to give food and stuff like that. They basically have coordinated a lot of services together in Arlington through one place to give food assistance. I heard a rumor that they did 2,000 clients came in for food last week, which is like a record for them. You know, it's like, woohoo, we're getting more starving people. But I mean, it just shows how important they are. And also, on another topic, I kept mentioning camels. Samson and Ellie are going to be at the Bull Run Light Show. And if you go there and you say Dennis Price is your favorite DJ to Samson and Ellie, the camels there. They're going to have this on Thursday, November 21st. And the 29th. They'll have it on December 5th, 12th. You'll get a half-price camel ride. How about that? At the light show that they're going to have out there at Bull Run. So you can find out about that on the internet. But I just said to some people I would make this announcement, so now I have. And I always like the idea of people giving food on Thanksgiving. Do you guys do Thanksgiving?
We do, and we're also actually doing a toy drive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we, since I was a Marine, Neva and I, for the last few years, have been doing a Toys for Tots drive.
Oh, cool.
With both of our companies, so friends and family or anybody can basically drop off toys to...
Just getting ready for Christmas and the holidays.
Exactly.
Wow. And Hanukkah, which is going to start, like, on Thanksgiving.
On Thanksgiving, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, that's a new challenge. You got to do a bar mitzvah. Maybe you can do, like, an Indian bar mitzvah. Or something like that.
That'd be fun.
Something to look into.
That's right. All right. Well, this is Dennis Price on the Radio Hotline. I will play a piece of music if I can hit the right button here. I'm always a few fingers away from the right button, and we'll just see what we get. Okay.
Well, that's the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening. If you ever want to find out more about Sonny Mather, you can find him at photographic.com. 571-449-7468. And of course, I'm Dennis Price at 703-629-6417. If you ever want any of your dreams built out of wood, stone, or steel, I'm a general contractor, and I do photography too. And you can find out more about both those things I do at photographybydennisprice.weebly.com. Okay, you have a great evening. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.